This is the Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Brian Rusk.
Back by popular demand, we have Ambassador Eric M. Javits on the radio show, and I always enjoy being with him. His mind is beautiful, and I remember working with his uncle the last time he was going to run for U.S. Senate. In fact, he came to the Statler Hotel in Buffalo to meet with the Erie County Republican Executive Committee, and I guided him the room. He didn't know where to go. Sat on the elevator, said, "Where do I go?" And I brought him there, and he was a very gifted U.S. Senator. He was a diplomat and a statesman and a gentleman, which today in politics is very much lacking. To tell you a little bit about Eric Javits, he was U.S. Permanent Representative of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, 2003 to 2009. He was educated at Stanford University, Columbia University, Bachelor of Arts, and Juris Doctorate. And he has been an exceptional tennis player for, I would say, up to 70 years. Because he played with my kids, and my kids are really good. A little more information about him. He's a member of the Council of American Ambassadors. He grew up in Connecticut. Nephew, as I said, of the former U.S. Senator Jake Javits. His father, Benjamin Javits, was an attorney, philanthropist, and author, and was brother to the late Senator Jacob Javits. Let's talk a little bit about the safety of Israel. When I came here for the taping, we're doing a remote taping in Palm Beach, Florida, the beautiful view towards the ocean. The ambassador was concerned about the safety of Israel. I thought everything was in line, but he's still concerned about Iran having a bomb that be there already. So let's talk about the safety of the State of Israel, Ambassador Javits.
Well, you have to realize that the Iranians do not have the same ethos about truth and honor that we have in the West. It means absolutely nothing to them. Their goal is to obtain their objective, whatever it is, whether it takes lying, deceit, delay, whatever they need to do, it's a practical tool set that they use and has nothing to do with integrity. So the reliability of any commitment that you get from the Iranians is absolutely worthless, in my opinion. And therefore, indulging in the delay that a negotiation causes, I think, is a waste of time. I won't say it's a mistake, because I don't have the intelligence that our administration has, but I strongly suspect that the whole idea of getting involved with them is an entrapment. And I don't trust the Iranians. I don't think even if we get a commitment of some kind of a treaty with them that it's reliable. And I worry that we should be destroying as quickly as possible militarily, along with the Israelis, their nuclear capability. Because any enrichment above the few percent that is required for experimentation or scientific purposes is really untraceable. I mean, we have the experience with the IAEA not being able to ascertain the full extent of what they're doing. And they're under commitments with the IAEA and the UN to fully divulge, to allow all the inspections, but of course they have reneged. And they've denied access to the most critical areas, which we suspect are being used to develop warheads and detonation devices. They're already up to a percentage of enrichment that within a couple of days or a week they could hit what they need to put a nuclear warhead together. And they're in combination. We've seen how they collaborate with the North Koreans. And the North Koreans got their technology long ago. They have the nuclear weapon. They have the delivery technology. And perhaps even Iran has stuff stored with the North Koreans to avoid having them found by inspecting Iranian territory. So I'm very suspicious. I'm completely against the idea of a negotiation, but it is going on, and I hope that the administration comes to the conclusion that I think they need to come to, that Iran can't be dealt with other than militarily and peremptorily.
But aren't we in a much, much better situation than under Biden? It seems like Biden was playing both sides. He was playing the side of Israel and the side of Hamas, and it was diabolical that he was playing both sides.
We're in much better shape because Israel is very strong. They've knocked out most of the surrogate forces that Iran has sponsored, financed, and organized, Hamas and Hezbollah and so forth. But that doesn't really take the venom out of the viper completely. And if they get a nuclear weapon, the fact that they've said death to Israel, death to America, and they keep saying it despite the fact that they're negotiating, why are they still saying it then? I'm concerned that they mean it and that they really want to take control of the Mideast, the oil wealth of the Middle East, and the leadership of the Middle East, and maybe collaborate North Korea, Russia, and Iran, and Iran and China, to the point that they have an axis of evil that dominates. So we have a lot to be concerned about.
Tough situation. Now let's talk to perhaps even a tougher situation. That is the Ukraine, as I mentioned earlier in the program. When we had General Tata on this program a few months ago, he was telling how the United States government is paying for the entire government of the Ukraine, just not the military. We pay for their schools, we pay for their transportation, their pensions, everything. And Ukraine is known for being corrupt for decades. Trump has mentioned that Zelensky hasn't had an election. It looks like they came to some agreement on minerals for the U.S. with sales. Let's talk about Ukraine. Can we get this war done? We're talking about thousands of lives a week, and I understand the average age of the men in the Ukraine is 43 years old because most of the men between 20 and 40 are dead with the war. So let's talk about the situation in the Ukraine. Ambassador Eric Javits.
I think the first thing we have to realize is that there's going to be a killing that will continue if it does settle. That's Trump's main priority, that he just sees it as a killing ground which will go on forever if it isn't stopped. He's going to do his best to stop it. But frankly, it's the Europeans who should be in the driver's seat and taking the primary lead and responsibility and burden of whatever happens. I think they are not fully prepared to step up, despite the fact they've had so many decades as a unified organization under NATO and under the European Economic Community and under the rulership of Belgium and Brussels. But they're not really together. The actual fighting groups in Europe are the ones in the east closest to the Russians that are most scared of a Russian invasion, and the Scandinavian countries in the north that are most scared of the Baltic countries, the small Baltic countries, being taken back by Russia, so the Russia has access to the Baltic and the military, the Navy use of those waters. The combination of the East war countries like Poland, Hungary, and so forth, who are ready to step up not just financially, and they have, but militarily to defend themselves, and the Scandinavians who are now organizing a united force together, so that they don't have to fight separately as separate countries, but can fight as a combined organization. And there's a very interesting coverage, I think, on that, either in the Times or the Herald Trib, the Wall Street Journal this weekend, yesterday and today about that. But there, the central parts of Europe, Germany, France, Italy, have not really stepped up financially the way they should have, and they're still not ready to go. Some of these countries are ready to go to 5%, not 2%, because they realize that how serious the Russian incursion and the threat to go beyond Ukraine really is. So our administration has a big uphill problem to try to get this war settled. And I'm not sure they can do it in light of Putin's announced intentions to rebuild his empire.
We're learning a great deal from Ambassador Eric M. Javits on the Rusk Report. We've had him on several times. We received comments from people in New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, as we've reached 17 states and much of Canada, as we're a 50,000 watt clear channel powerhouse, the Bet AM 1520. If you're listening in Buffalo, Manhattan, Washington, drop us a note. Please write to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. This station has received letters as far away as Scandinavia and New Zealand, so drop us a note. We'd like to hear from you. I'd like to thank those who've called regarding our recent guest, Reverend Alfredo Hernandez, who's in charge of the St. Vincent de Paul Seminary, 70-acre campus in Boynton Beach, Florida, opera singer Victoria Hutton, and famous author Lawrence Lehmer, who has a hit book out now, Warhol's Musings. A little plug here. For over 60 years, the Ampol Legal newspaper has been Polonia's newspaper, providing readers with news, feature articles, great columns, and recipes. Get this community newspaper delivered to your home or business each week for less than 70 cents. Visit our website, www.ampoleagle.com, and click on the subscribe menu to order a print or digital edition. That's www.ampoleagle.com, or call 716-835-9454. That's 716-835-9454 for the Ampol Eagle newspaper. Now, we were talking about the Ukraine, and you were mentioning about the eastern section of the Ukraine. Aren't a lot of the population within 10 or 20 miles of the Russian border pro-Soviet, pro-Russian?
Well, they speak Russian.
Right.
And many of them, I'm sure, are. Many of them, I'm sure, aren't. So it's a case of the compromise, I think, requires that the Russian sovereignty will extend to that area, because that's what Putin's launched this war as part of his reason for invading. The other reason for invading was he felt that he needed to eliminate the threat of NATO on his doorstep, and that there was actually a regime in Ukraine which was, he described it as a Nazi type fascist regime, which it wasn't, but it could have appeared that way to him as an unfriendly regime, and he was just using those terms. But it certainly was an unfriendly regime from the standpoint of the fact they wanted to resist any
yes.
takeover in the East, and they wanted to keep their country as a united entity. I don't think that meshed very well with his ambitions about rebuilding his empire. So he did invade, and as I've seen in world history, if you don't resist invaders, you're going to have more invasion. And if you can't deter it, you better resist it. We failed to deter it, which was, I think, the fault of Democratic administration here in the U.S. that failed to give them the weapons they needed in time to discourage Putin from doing what he did. And too little too late is a very bad prescription for keeping the peace. The best prescription for keeping the peace is to have such a strong deterrence that the would-be aggressor doesn't even want to think about it.
Well, the question is Putin running out of money? I mean, this has cost them a lot of lives, a lot of money. Now they're having North Korean and Chinese troops come in and fight their battles. Is he up against it financially?
He has, I think, an alliance where he's being used as a surrogate for China.
But they're running out of money now, probably, with the tariffs.
Well, I wouldn't say they're running out of money because everybody's running out of money. The U.S. as well. So I think we're getting to the point where a settlement could very well take place because of financial need, the numbers of deaths, the destruction that is, I think, needless because people see it's not producing the results that they sought. And I think a settlement probably is going to come. But the problem is, how long is that going to last? My concern is that the U.S. needs to step up its military preparations urgently, seriously urgently, and to do so to a point which might look unreasonable to Americans, but which will keep the peace for the next few decades. If not, we're going to get into a war.
Well, shouldn't the Europeans come up with more money? It's in their neck of the woods. We're 3,000 miles away.
They have a dependency problem that they've gotten used to being supported, subsidized, nurtured, and cushioned, umbrellaed with our nuclear umbrella over them. They're spoiled. I don't like to use the word spoiled, but they're accustomed to that. Uh-huh. For 4 or 5 decades, where it no longer was as reasonable as in the first couple of decades after World War II. But they weren't weaned off. And to do it by shock, which is what Trump is trying to do, because apparently you can't do it little by little. We're too far gone financially ourselves as far as our debt being, what, over 38 trillion. We can't afford to keep this going. So we had to use shock treatment. The question is, did we use enough nice words along with the shock treatment? Probably not. And probably not the 60 or 90 days of cushion that was needed to get the message across a little more softly, which would have been nice. However, shock treatment is probably what's needed when...
Well, he's doing that.
He's doing that, which is what I think will accomplish the needed result.
Let's talk about another region of the world where there's a lot of fear, and that's in Taiwan. Chinese are flexing their muscles all the time. They have an enormous navy. They're doing military operations around Taiwan all the time. Is Taiwan in deep trouble? Do they need more arms from the United States?
Well, I wouldn't say they need more arms from the United States, but they need more resolve and deterrence from the U.S. to discourage China to go forward. I think we have to be extremely clear as to whether we will help defend Taiwan. And if you fail to give that kind of deterrence to China, that message that they better not do this because they're going to suffer badly and wind up with a hot rock and nothing else. When they get Taiwan, it'll just be a hot rock. Nothing worth having. So for the sake of that, they would be much more sensible to threaten, to patrol, to bully, and to wait. And I think that's what they're basically going to do now that Trump is in. If we had had Kamala as president, I think they would have tried. Because I don't think
she
would
have...
She
was seen as weak.
Yeah. And this...
And indecisive.
This administration, I think, is the deterrence that we needed with respect to Taiwan.
Good. For those who have just tuned in, we're speaking with Ambassador Eric Javits, backed by popular demand on the Rusk Report, blanketing 17 states and much of Canada. If you're listening in Cheektowaga, New York, or in Ohio, or Pennsylvania, or Northern Florida, drop us a note. Please write to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520. 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. Always greeting cards and letters from Canadian and European listeners. A little more information about Ambassador Javits. He graduated from the Choate School in 48, spent 1 year at Stanford in California, and he was a big tennis star. He transferred to Columbia College and graduated Phi Beta Kappa in 52. He attended Columbia Law School and graduated in 55. Very gifted diplomatic statesman and entrepreneur, Eric M. Javits. Let's talk about the southern border. That looks like a tremendous success on the part of Trump, getting rid of about 99% of the illegals coming in. And it's where I'm from, it's bankrupting New York State. $7 billion in the last 3 years spent on illegals. The state and the city of New York are broke because of this. Let's talk about what Trump did at the southern border. Are you pleased?
Oh, I think that every American should be pleased. If we didn't stop influx, it had to stop because we were being taken over and we would lose the country. We still have the problem of those who are here and how to get them out of here. This was not a case of the normal kind of immigration where people accommodate and acclimatize to the country and become American by at least the second generation, fully American. This was a case of military age males, mostly, coming in with who knows what intentions, and enormous numbers of ill people, of people with military and criminal backgrounds. And they may be here for a purpose. We still don't know. And it's very, very troubling. I'm also very concerned the courts have no idea how discouraging it is to normal citizens to realize that there's some resistance to getting these people out of here. They've been taking up our taxpayer money far excessively over what we can afford, and crowding our schools and lowering the standard of public morals, of safety, pressuring our police and fire and medical services, ruining our school systems in many cases, and then also threatening the safety of people and harming people. So I think the idea that anyone who's in this country illegally has any constitutional rights at all is absurd.
Can they have constitutional rights if they're not U.S. citizens?
Well, no, they're illegals, they're criminals, they've broken the law, they do not deserve constitutional protections unless they have a green card where they had applied and were admitted and given a permission to be here. Then at least you know they deserve some kind of consideration. But if they're here illegally,
they're not entitled to due process, correct?
No, they should be just put on a plane and shipped out, and there should be absolutely no protection for them.
Let's talk about another controversial issue. Many say it's long overdue about the change in the tariffs, that we're having a $1 trillion trade imbalance for many, many years. We just can't afford it anymore. Trump is tough, but isn't this the type of medicine that we need that has not been enacted for the last 40 or 50 years?
Well, I think the way this is talked about is not clear enough. I think if we expressed our goal as reciprocity, and keep repeating reciprocity, it would be understood as something that was not as excessive, unfair, onerous, or sudden as if we enunciated ourselves much more clearly as wanting the principle of reciprocity, not the principle of punishment, not the principle of protection, not anything else but reciprocity, which is what is underlying free trade, actually. So the idea that we have given subsidization and help to other countries to try to enrich them, to try to build up their industries, to try to grant them an opening into our markets, which on favorable economic terms, which would not be normally the competitive economic terms, that day is over. And I think it's only reciprocity that we should be talking about right now.
Sorry to bring the Rusk Report to a close. We've learned a great deal for the fifth time on the Rusk Report on the Bet AM 1520. Ambassador Eric M. Javits, a very gifted statesman and diplomat. Special thanks to Kevin Carr, Director of Production, for the last 20 years, and thank you for enlightening us, Ambassador Eric Javits. Have a great week.
You've been listening to The Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at the Western New York community with news, features, and special guests. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Brian Rusk, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.